You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
War, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is Menage a Troy. I'm Sina, and I'm from Houston.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska. Houston, we have a problem.
Well, I hope not. I hope I'm not a problem.
But, you know, some problems are good problems. Some problems are bad problems.
So I'm wondering whether both of you think this is a problem episode, a bad problem episode, or a good problem episode.
Oh, gee, I think we should save that as a surprise. Oh, whoops. Yeah, it should be a surprise.
Okay.
So, Sina, you sound familiar. Gosh darn it, where do I know you from?
Our sister show on the network?
Yeah. Isn't it funny how I find a way to make people say things like I, you know. Yes. Remind everyone, have you ever been on our show yet?
I have. Yes, you have deleted this from your memory.
No, I don't.
For some reason.
I don't have a memory.
Because you hate the show. You hate that particular episode. It was Shades of Grey.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You see, now if I fall in a coma, I'm hoping I never remember that one.
I see what you did there.
Yes. Yes. Don't ever let anything climb up my leg, because if it gets to my brain, we're screwed. Okay, so our sister show. Why don't you tell us about our sister show?
I will. I am the main host of Ten Forward, but I have plenty of other hosts that join me. Generally, we put out a show every week unless we are on hiatus for holidays or work schedule or something like that. But we like to talk about Desert Island Trek, Shipwreck Trek. Our latest show was a music show for Trek music and Christmas. We have some upcoming shows that we're recording over the next couple of weeks, so we will be back.
And I know I was on one of them, but not the other.
Yes, you were on...
I think Desert Island.
Desert Island Trek, and we still need to have you back to do your Shipwreck Trek.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And James, you keep threatening that you have a Shipwreck Trek, even though you said you weren't ever going to do one, so I'm interested in that.
Actually, I have to say, I do have a list of episodes, and it's fantastic. It's a really good list, and I'm going to be the most unpopular guy in the world if that ever comes off.
Hmm.
Well, based on that, we're going to definitely have to have you on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and to make sure everyone knows, Desert Island is the one that if you were on a desert island, which five episodes would you take for sure? What must you have? Is that correct?
Yes, we do give you 10 or 11 gimme episodes, but you choose five additional ones. Mm-hmm. And then the Shipwreck Trek are those that you never, ever want to see again, ever.
Okay. Okay. So I guess Desert Island will be the Wilson Ball. And I can't think of the analogy for Shipwreck.
Joe versus the Volcano.
Oh, there we go. Well, I meant like, you know, what's the name of the Tom Hanks movie where he gets shipwrecked? Or no?
Oh, well, right. That one is... Oh, my gosh. What is the name of that movie?
Castaway.
Castaway.
Castaway. Yes. Thank you.
See, that's my brain over there across the pond. All right.
Can I borrow your brain?
James?
I don't think I have one.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay.
Brain, what is brain?
Brain, what is brain? You got that right.
That is a great episode.
Yeah?
Have you seen it yet, Cena?
I have. It is so bad, it's good.
Oh, that makes sense.
It's not that bad. I honestly don't think it's that... I don't think it's that obnoxiously bad.
Oh.
But anyway... Hey, Lou, we're going to have to do the original series one of these days.
So that's after Lower Pylon 2.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know what we're going to call the Voyager one. Or Enterprise.
There's Coffee in That Nebula.
You're listening to There's Coffee in That Nebula. No, that doesn't work. Okay, anyway. Or what was the name of the singularity they used to contact the Alpha Quadrant? I can't think.
It had a name?
I think so. It was some kind of... well, at one time they used like a Hirogen station or...
You mean the relay thing?
Yeah, the relay something.
Right, the Hirogen relay network or something like that.
Maybe that's what will be, the Hirogen relay network. No, I don't know. And what about Enterprise? You're listening to Porthos, a Enterprise podcast. Where we discuss everything about that beagle. Anyway, and how he was actually a she. And there was more than one she. It was actually three she's. Wasn't it like Prada and something or not? I don't remember. All right. So, well, it's good to have you on, Cena, again.
Thank you.
And maybe we'll have you on again. Season 4 just opened up.
I'd like that. Yeah. I'll take a look.
Yes. And that goes for everybody. Go to TrekMateFamily.com. I think it's TrekMate.org.uk or something. Just go to TrekMateFamily.com and look for our podcast and our season 4. And I forgot to change the name of it. It still says season 3. I got to do that.
No, and we always, you know, we certainly want more ladies on the show, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I think we're far too man heavy.
Yes.
With all of our guests, so that, you know, the more lovely ladies that can come on and talk about Trek, it will stop us going on to our tangents of a girl on dog on bloke action in Enterprise, which I think we did for about 3 weeks running a few weeks ago.
Oh, that's right, it was girl on dog, or no, on man on dog. Yeah, it was like T'Pol and Hoshi on Archer on Partho.
We have female company this week, Lou. Let's keep going.
Please. All right, well then, head on into the synopsis.
Okay, the synopsis for tonight's show is a Ferengi Daemon kidnaps Riker, Deanna, and Lwaxana Troi. This is the 24th episode of Season 3 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date is May 28, 1990. It was written by Fred Bronson and Susan Sackett, directed by Robert Legato. Guest stars include Majel Barrett as Lwaxana Troi, Frank Corsentino as Tog, Ethan Phillips, yay Neelix, as Farrick, Peter Slutsker, no kidding, as Raytan Grax, oh my gosh, and is that Carol? Stroykin as Hom. Sorry for slaughtering everybody's name.
Yeah, no kidding. It was Slutsker. Believe it or not, Slutsker.
Okay, so are we going to actually tell what we think about this episode, or are we going to wait for a little bit later?
Just give us a little snippet of what you're thinking so far.
Well, I chose this episode, so... I like it.
Okay, I'll go next. I don't know why you chose this episode. James, what about you?
Okay, so I think I must come in between you guys.
You may have to.
So there are a couple of things that make this episode good. I like the Ferengi. I always like the Ferengi. I like Lwaxana Troi. I think I always like Lwaxana Troi. So I don't think it can be all that bad, but I'm actually, I'm very keen to have a discussion with you, Sina, about, you know, this episode does kind of tease the Riker-Troy relationship, or at least it has that as part of the, you know, as part of the storyline. And the more I watch, and certainly the more I rewatch TNG, the more I just can't help but think that Riker is so far below Troy's league that I have no idea why she ever entertained him in the first place.
Really? That's interesting. Hmm. Because she's of the fifth house of Beta Zed?
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, it's not just that. It's that Riker is dreadful, and I kind of... I don't think Riker deserves Troy at all. And I have no idea why they're hanging around. And, you know, Troy asks for shore leave in this episode, right? And even Picard says, hey, you know, Troy's asked for shore leave. She's going to visit home. Why don't you go along with her? Why? Why does Troy need Riker coming and encroaching on her territory and ruining her holiday? You know, they end up being kidnapped because Riker can't bear to see Troy go off on holiday by herself. I can't help but think Riker's a bad influence on Troy.
Are you sure? Maybe she didn't say, Captain, I'd like to go on holiday, and could you nudge your number one to go with me? He's probably going to say no, but if it comes from you...
I'm certain that discussion never happened.
Okay. So, why do you think Riker or Picard chose Riker? Why not send Deanna with, or Beverly with her?
I have no good answer for that. Other than that, from the writing perspective, they like to keep teasing, you know, Riker ending up with Troy in due course.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's exactly why.
Because if he didn't go, they would have gotten kidnapped together and they would have been screwed. So obviously Riker had to spoil it for him. Okay. Okay, so anyway... hey, everyone, spoiler alert, okay? And the spoiler is, I think I'm going to be pretty harsh on this one. So I think Doc is going to do most of the talking, like he said. Okay, so let's start off by saying Majel Barrett. Of course, she's the late Majel Barrett. Or is it Majel?
I've never known.
I think it was, yeah. Majel Barrett. The wife of Gene Roddenberry. And okay, here's the deal. It's not her. This is not this episode, and my feeling for this episode is not her fault. And I'm probably what Doc would call a Luoxana apologist, because I love Luoxana Troi. Absolutely, I think everything she does in Star Trek, with the exception of today, is awesome. The Ferengi kind of like seemed to be like a cartoon caricature of a species today. I'm thankful for Quark later. I don't know. What do you guys think of?
Yeah, but I was going to say, they're still trying to kind of figure out where the Ferengi are going to fit in the Trek universe. They tried to have them be as the big bad, which didn't work out, obviously. So then they're trying to shift gears and see where they can try to fit these,
yeah,
this species. And I think they are closer with this episode to what they end up being in Deep Space Nine. It's kind of a step along the way, for lack of a better word.
Mm.
Yeah, I entirely agree. I think this episode is very much a transition episode. There's a front-loaded mention of, you know, they've come here to make a profit, and that stuff is in the background. Yes, you still have these demons that, for whatever reason, seem to be in control of a starship, but at the same time doing business, which is a little bit weird. But is this episode really any more cartoony than the last couple of Ferengi episodes we've had, you know, with the price, for example? Is it really that different? I don't think it's that much out of step. It's, you know, we've moved out of the idea of these guys being extremely threatening, and we're in this transition phase until, I suppose, DS9 picks them up.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I thought the price was a little better. I mean, they walk in blustering. I'll match anyone's offer and add the gold. This one here, it was more like all he wanted was Luoxana Troy for her negotiating power and her, umox. But they didn't really use the word umox, did they?
Oh, no, they do use the word umox.
Umox? Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, so when she's giving him a little rub down, they do use the word... I think he says that no one has given him umox like that before. And I think Luoxana goes, umox? And he gets all this.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
There's no word for it in your language. Although, to be perfectly honest with you, I can think of a couple
yeah.
that would probably do.
Mm-hmm. And did you notice Captain Picard using the word schedule?
Are you trying to say with a soft sh?
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Is that right?
French guys, I tell you, I don't know why the French in the 24th century are imitating the English.
It's obviously because we invaded in the 22nd century.
That makes perfect sense. You guys were still pissed off that we got our country from you, and now you're just going to go take the French. All right, because he used another word, the biennial conference on Betazoid, the biennial trade conference, and I thought, what's a biennial? Obviously, he meant biannual. Biennial.
I didn't see a problem with that.
No, of course not.
I think it's just pronunciation.
Of course you didn't see a problem with that. Nah, okay, that's nitpicky. Okay, so we're at Beta Z, where they attended the biennial trade conference, and the Ferengi has been allowed to participate. Not only in the conference, but they also get to participate in the 3D chess game with Riker, who whips, or I guess you could say maybe de-whips, the Ferengi guy. Get it? De-whips. They have whips. They don't use whips anymore. Do you think they still use chain? Never mind. It was a bad reference there. You didn't get.
I got, don't worry. I got
that. You got it? Good. So, the Ferengi are at the conference.
There's a fair amount of kind of casual racism being thrown at the Ferengi, I think, at the start of this episode.
And I got that. What's the deal with Luoxana? Is she just like, I'm going to meet Captain Picard, excuse me. Ugh.
Well, I think obviously Luoxana doesn't want her time wasted. And actually, before we got onto Luoxana, I really like the, I always like the interactions between her and, Luoxana and Deanna Troi. And I like it when they're doing their back and forth. And I still think that, Major Barrett does a really good performance this episode in general. And I like when they start, they open up and you know that they are, they're obviously acting without hearing the voice that is obviously in a Major Barrett's or in Roxana's head. And there's back and forth. And I always like it when they do that. They're able to talk without talking and then spontaneously go into talking with, verbally talking. And I always find that fun.
Yeah. Right. It's very believable.
Right.
Roxana's really playful. And she's, I think the verbal jousting that she always has with, frankly, everyone, and in particular with Deanna, is always, always good.
I feel for poor Deanna because she doesn't know how to take her mother. She doesn't know how to react to her. Luoxana is always, like you said, playful and very pointedly saying these things, and Deanna just gets frustrated beyond all get out, as you see in this episode, and doesn't know how to react to her.
And I don't understand that. I mean, what's the problem? It's rude not to talk aloud. No. I mean, I don't think the guys in the next table are, whispering to each other, look at these two. They're talking to each other telepathically, the stupid bitches. I don't want to be here no more because of that. I mean, right. That's just the
it's
way
just
they do
them.
It.
It's just them. If there were other people at the table, it would be rude, but it is just them.
Right. It just Deanna just came across as a spoiled brat. the way she was treating her mom. To me, I thought.
Actually, the one thing I do have to say about the episode is that one of the negative points that I think it does have is that I think a lot of the scenes with the two Troys and a lot of the back and forth and a lot of the what Laxana's being asked to do in this episode, which is, be over the top, be very much fun, be kind of, she starts manipulating people later and she's very comedic in her kind of like over the top performance. We have kind of seen that before, and I think we've seen that for the last couple of occasions that she's been here. And I'm not convinced that they're doing much more than saying, hey, Roxana, come into the episode and be Roxana, because everyone loves that. There's nothing that really pushes her character forward. And this is even despite the fact that if you do want to read it in a more kind of dark way of what the episode is that she gets abducted, she offers herself into kind of slavery on behalf of her children to escape, and then she happens to be rescued at the end. But it's never played in a dark way. It's always played as a over-the-top fun kind of a performance. And I just felt that if there's one criticism I could lay at the episode, it's that you're basically just winding up Roxana and say, hey, do your thing. Do your thing that you did last time, and do your thing that you did, when you first came in Haven. And I think that's a slight weakness of the episode.
Well, I don't know that I agree with you, because I think that the first part or the first two-thirds of the episode, she is playing Roxana, and Roxana in the caricature, cartoony, I'm playing this overbearing mother character because it suits me to play this overbearing mother character, but then when stuff gets real, she drops all that and she's very serious. And maybe you've seen this before in previous episodes, but I think up until a certain point, yes, they just said, hey, do your Roxana thing. But afterwards, you're right. It is played not darkly. It's played comedically, but there is some substance in the latter part of the episode to her performance and to Roxana.
No, I agree with that. And I think that is true. I would have liked to have seen kind of more empowerment, I suppose, of Roxana. And I know that in general, it clearly is happening as she manipulates the situation. I'm not a big fan of how they do this gear shift at the end where she moves from being the manipulator in the Ferengi's bed in order to be thrown into the mind control experiment, which I think is a bit jarring. But if we do just focus at the beginning of the episode, the scene where Troy and the two Troys are in their quarters and they're having an argument about stop calling me little one, that effectively is just straight out of Haven. It's almost cut and paste across, and there's no, I felt that there was no reason for it. It's almost, I mean, by the way, this might be believable. This might be that, you have a problem with your mom, and whenever she turns up, you rehash, retread all of these arguments and all of these, frustrations. But I felt that I love the Roxana character so much that I want that it to be more special than just reheated, debates and situations.
But I think that's what does happen if you don't. She obviously loves her mom, and obviously Roxana loves Deanna. But if you don't see each other or you don't have that much communication, these things or these issues between them, if they're not resolved, are going to keep coming back up. So I don't have an issue with it, quite frankly.
Does the presence of Riker on the Ferengi ship hurt the story? Because I'm just thinking that because what Roxana does, right, she does go from this kind of overbearing mother figure that's having arguments, and then she does end up trying to manipulate her way out, and then eventually she needs to effectively sacrifice herself for her daughter to escape. And I felt that they didn't quite have the heft that I would have expected that kind of drama to have. And I'm just trying to think about whether or not the presence of Riker there made the reaction that you probably would have expected from Troy somewhat more subdued. Maybe this might have worked better with a with a two-piece between between Major Barrett and Marina Sirtis doing their things and actually working through their relationship, because I felt maybe with Riker being involved, there was just too many moving parts. Because there is certainly an opportunity for there to be a learning experience on the Ferengi vessel. Mm. And I'm...
No.
Despite what actually happens, I don't quite see that that's... That kind of gets pulled off. But anyway, I should defer.
Yeah, if it was just them two, then which one would have thought of using the Algoling something rhythmic chimes as a distress call?
Yeah, Deanna Troi would have done that.
Do you think she even knows how to run a communication system?
Yeah, I was going to say, this isn't season 5 Disaster Troi. This is season 3 Counselor Troi.
She doesn't know anything. I think
I say that because she's a woman.
No, I'm saying that because she doesn't do anything. I mean, she hasn't done one technical thing.
Yeah.
The entire run.
I'm the you know me, James. I'm the first one to jump on the don't be sexist to women, podium there. But in fairness, Deanna has been a great counselor, but she hasn't had anything, at least not on the show, where she's done anything technical. And you don't start seeing that until after season 5 because of Disaster.
Okay, sure. No, I accept that, and I do accept that this would be like a break from what we've seen before. But in an episode that could have been framed as a way of bringing together the mother and the daughter, and the mother having to make like an ultimate sacrifice, or at least a significant sacrifice on behalf of the daughter, who the daughter was somewhat estranged from at the beginning of the episode, I just don't quite understand why we've got the ex-boyfriend having to turn up to save the day. It just doesn't quite, it feels like a missed opportunity somewhat.
No, it's the same answer. There's no way the two women, and I don't mean women as descriptive, there's no way the two Troys would have been able to get themselves out of the situation in a technical way, because neither one of them have technical skills. And I have not read ahead for a Disaster, but it seems to me that they've boxed Deanna Troi into a corner, and they needed to expand her horizons a little bit, and which is why she's on the bridge. But even when she's there, she still knows nothing. Everybody's got to tell her, well, this is what I would do. Yeah, okay, do that. Or, with Ro, it was easy. No, we're not just going to cut him off and let him die. We're going to give him every possible chance. But with O'Brien, he had to feed her everything that she probably should do, and she knew better. Just do what he says. He knows more than I do, because I don't know squat.
And back to your point, James, about would it have been better if it had just been the Troys to try to have some kind of understanding or a moment between them where they at least try to settle this constant friction between them and Riker not having been there. I do see your point in that sense. If it had been a darker episode or a more serious episode, I think that that could have been a very valid way, and somehow they, get rescued by the Enterprise, whether it's by technical matters, which I tend to agree with Lou that they didn't have that, or some other way, because the Daemon was about to, turn around and take Riker and Deanna back. But the way that they were playing this episode was for comedy. Mm-hmm. Just comedy. And so that's why you have to introduce these other elements. And let's not forget the small B story with Wesley. You have to have a reason for the Enterprise to come back, for Wesley to show that he's willing to give up going to the academy and taking his oral examination, the good of the ship over the good of these two, three people over his desires. So you have that coming into play with this comedic episode, and you're just not going to get what would be more meat instead of kind of fluffy stuff.
You know, another thing I was just thinking of, actually, I do think they came to terms with each other during this episode. They just didn't do it in the same room. Because when we're jumping ahead here, but when the daemon Tog has Luoxana on the bed, and I mean they're trying this goofy ass kiss, and then they fade back, and the camera hits to Deanna's face, and you could tell the pain on her face. Oh God, I think she knew exactly what Mama was doing for her. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And I think that's where they probably, maybe off screen type of thing, dealt with their mommy-daughter issues. But I don't know. Little one. Oh, yeah. I don't call my daughter little one. She'd hit me. Every female has her price. Is that true, Sina?
No.
Well, you'd be irritating to a daemon then.
I would be.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so.
Okay, so now let's talk about how Deanna decides to go visit her mom because they spend a little time together. And right outside the door, you hear, "Come in, little one." You guys notice that, obviously. But yet when she opens up, when the door opens, it looks like Luoxana's knocked out and half, like her brain was hurting.
You mean she shouldn't have been able to
telepathically invite her in?
Because she was so tired, or her brain was so tired?
Yeah. It was a completely different Luoxana from, "Come in, little one," to, "Oh, God, that awful toad."
I don't think that's too much of a problem.
No, I mean, no, go for it.
You know, in my internal monologue, I'm still extremely enthusiastic and suave and sophisticated and stuff, no matter how I come across.
Yes, you are. I'll take that. I'll take that. Ah, the sacred chalice of Reeks.
A moldy old clay pot.
Yes. About time we get a definition of what it really is. So what about the other stuff? Daughter of the, what was it, the fifth house of Zoltor? Or, what is she again?
Daughter of the fifth house of Beta Zed, holder of the sacred chalice of Reeks, and keeper of the rings of Beta Zed, or something like that.
Oh, yeah, heir to the rings of Beta Zed.
Heir. Thank you.
So, the fifth, daughter of the fifth family, huh?
There could be millions of them, for all we know.
Right. Okay. Well, I don't know. I think, obviously, I love Luoxana, and I even like Luoxana in this episode. It just, I don't know. The story just bothers me that they put her in. I don't know. Okay, so let's see here.
Do you mean the story as in, you know, the interaction with the Ferengi? The fact they get abducted, or?
The whole thing. It just, I don't know. Let's just say that I enjoyed watching Sarek better at the same time, because I watched Sarek before this one.
That's a bit unfair comparison.
It really is unfair, but
because you have... Oh, you have two completely different episodes. Yeah. I mean, I like this episode. That's what I said at the very beginning. I understand it has flaws, and I understand it's not for everybody. If you don't like Ferengi, you're not going to like this. If you don't think, you know, if you like more dramatic, serious episodes, you're not going to like this. But taking it what it is, that it's supposed to be a funny and comedic episode, I watched it last night in preparation for the podcast, and I was kind of afraid that it wouldn't hold up to my recollection, because it's been at least 2 or 3 years since I've watched it. But I was pleasantly surprised. Are there some plot holes and some stuff that made me cringe? Sure. But, you know, I don't think you can really compare it to Sarek.
No.
In the sense of having the same type of drama, or it's just two completely different episodes.
No, so I'm going to have to defend the episode as well now, because, you know, I do like a lot of stuff here. I think that there are missed opportunities rather than anything that is seriously wrong with the episode. But, when Troy and Riker go down to, Beta Z, and they're having their walk, when you hear Roxana's in the background and she's creeping up on them, it brings a smile to my face. I like the fact that there's going to be that interaction. You know she's going to come over and be the, be the in-law mother, and it's going to be fun, and she's going to be, rude to people. And then when you get the Ferengi come down, you've got the interaction between, the aristocracy of Roxana Troy and the Ferengi toad that's trying to get her. It's a huge clash, and there's a lot of stuff played for comedy on that. And then you see Roxana actually say, look, I'm going to play this, and I'm going to get what I need to get out of it. And she's put in some uncomfortable situations, and it's all played for comedy. And I think it's, I like the idea of Roxana having to go up against a daemon, or a demon tog, as she calls them. And I think there's a lot of good stuff there.
Look, demon tog, or whatever your name is. But, I mean, even before that, there's a lot of sight comedy before Roxana even says, over here, Mr. Holm, this is a perfect place. And the way that the camera is panning, you see Riker and Troy, and they're reminiscing about their relationship back when he was stationed on Beta Z, and they start kissing. But when you see them, all of a sudden, on the left-hand side of the screen, you see, without a word, Roxana walk into the screen with her parasol, and she's pointing toward the picnic spot and telling Mr. Holm before she even says anything. And to me, that kind of sight comedy that you have to see is priceless. And then she does speak, and the exasperation of Troy and Riker drops his hands. Deanna kind of bounces her head on Riker's chest, like, why? I mean, Daemon Togg giving Roxana the flowers, and Roxana, as she's talking, just kind of looking at them and dismissing them and literally tossing them away. I mean, that, just for me, that kind of stuff is really, really funny.
And say something else I also like about this, that you need Roxana to join Troy and Riker in order to be abducted, but you also need Mr. Holm not to be there. So you kind of think, well, how is that going to work? So you have to get them in a room separate or whatever. But the way they do it is, it's just complete classic Roxana, which is that, of course, she turns up with Mr. Holm because that's what she would do. And she just goes, oh, go and pick berries. And of course he would go off. And of course that's something that she would do. Mm-hmm. And it's just so natural that, in other circumstances, you might be thinking, well, why would these people be together? Why wouldn't that other person be here? This partnership doesn't quite look or feel right. But with the way the setup works, it's, in my mind, that it's very natural. It's very clear that this is how Roxana would behave. And then while they have been beamed away, of course, Mr. Holm kind of comes along and thinks, well, where they all got, and looks confused, which is also, it tickles me at least.
Okay, so as soon as Wesley completes the oral exam, he will be admitted to the academy.
Yes, they made a very big deal about, I can't remember where the scene is where he's talking to Picard and Data, Riker, and they're basically heaping praise upon Wesley for some wonderful techie babble stuff that he did. Is that before now or after? It's kind of all wrapped up, so, where...
That was in Sarek, wasn't it?
No. It's at the beginning of... Why are you watching two episodes?
Yeah,
we're talking about Menage a Troy this week.
Yeah, I do that.
That's at the beginning of the episode where LaForge and Data are talking to Picard, and you know they mention that yes, although we of course built the microprocessor chip, Wesley here solved the equations governing its operation, that kind of stuff. Oh. And I thought there was a little bit too much Wesley love in this episode. Yeah. At least at the beginning, it's quite thickly troweled on. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I was interrupting, but I was agreeing with you because I like Wesley. I'm not a Wesley hater. I really like Wesley. And so I'm happy in this episode because he is shown in a very good light. But I also happen to think that they were just kind of like heaping the praise on this teenage kid way too much. You can't tell me that Data wouldn't have been able to do the same equations that Wesley did.
No, exactly. But this episode is good, though. This episode is good that it gets Wesley out of his pajamas. Yes. And I think if nothing else, it's good that he now gets, we finally get away from this. So I suppose I say finally, but it's actually when the next lot of Starfleet exams comes around, it's very quick. But this feasibly gets out of the Academy storyline where you have to go and sit exams and you're wondering what he's still doing on the ship because he doesn't have exams to do. And are we going to have another episode where he fails the entrance exams? I think this is designed to break away from that. It puts him in a uniform. It puts him at the front of the ship. And I think it's a good positive step for the character. And I really like, frankly, I love the fact that he's in red now, so that in Best of Both Worlds, he's not in his pajamas and he's not spoiling that episode by wandering around as an acting ensign. So I'm really happy that they managed to effectively land the Wesley character into his proper position.
Now, why didn't Data come up with the equations to do that? My guess is the same reason Data didn't get the Cochrane distortion effect of I mean, why didn't Data pick that up? He should have caught that instantly.
Right. But, and that's another issue I have with this episode, but I can forgive it because I like the episode.
It's all's forgiven.
And because I like Wesley.
But does it matter that I think that the story on which they put in this particular, they just have to send a distress signal. That's really all that they're trying to do. That's, it's not integral to the plot, the ins and outs of the distress signal per se, or whether or not it's Wesley that picks it up, whether it's Data that picks it up. I suppose they want Wesley to have to turn around from leaving the ship to run back to the bridge. I don't know why he couldn't just, phone it over or whatnot. But I actually felt that, as long as it's not like a critical part of the plot that you then don't like wander off and go, hang on a second, that didn't make any sense whatsoever, I'm very happy to let these things go.
Okay, so they they get beamed to the Daemon's quarters, maybe it's his ready room, but no clothing necessary. Oh. Even their transporter can't be trusted.
That's a good line.
Yes, I thought that was funny. Because really, if you think about it, I didn't see a lot of trying to cover things up. Even one time, Deanna points at something, so obviously they weren't too embarrassed.
Well, if they had been rushing to cover themselves up or, very obvious, like in Enterprise, whatever that episode is that Hoshi is crawling through the Jeffries tubes and lands in Malcolm's quarters and her top slips off and she's very obviously covering her breasts with her hands. If that had happened in this episode, it would have been kind of like, really? Mm. You're the ones who have naked weddings.
Right.
You celebrate nudity as just part of your openness and free society is not the words I mean, but what I'm
right.
talking about.
Yes.
Just you're telepathic. That can be more intimate than seeing each other naked. So I'm glad that they didn't immediately start doing the Hoshi cover up.
And I like the I like one of the throwaway lines they had, which is like, "Oh, look at him there! Look at him! Look at us! They're as bad as humans." I felt that was true in character of Roxana.
But here,
and I think that she's
his was a sign of your what was it?
Disgust.
Yeah.
He was not leering at them. He was disgusted at female humans.
Yes, revulsion. That's it. That was a word. So, okay, Doc, it's time to school us.
Oh dear.
You ready for this?
Go on.
Get your books out, kids, because Dr. Roberts is about to school ya.
Energy. Data says 5.34 times 10 to the 41st watt. Any ideas?
Yeah. Sure. First of all,
everybody loves it when I do this, man. We got to give them what they want.
A watt isn't a unit of energy, for a start. But all that they're saying is that they're just saying they're saying a very large number of watts. That's all.
That's all we're going to get from you? Is that? No technicals?
What are you looking for here? All it is that there's supposed to be like a stellar nursery or something like that. It's given out a lot of, there's a lot of energy being output, I suppose. And they're just saying that there's, however much times 10 to the power of 41 lots of watts coming out of this interstellar nursery. Pretty boring, I suppose. Unless, of course, you can put some type of windmill or a solar panel there that will be able to, supply enough energy to run this enterprise for the next 50 years.
So it's a lot of energy, in other words.
Yes, it's putting out a lot of energy.
Okay.
I don't know how it would compare to anything that we use, per se, but anything to the 41st power is very big.
It's got to be. Okay. Oh, my dear Daemon, I want to make you a fizzy drink just to make your ears tingle. But I need your access code.
We can't possibly be at this point already.
Oh, yes, I am. I don't know where you're at.
Well, I think Lou might be skipping a little bit just because he doesn't like this episode all that much.
I thought I kept in line here. I'm on...
Well, I don't mean that you skipped anything that was too terribly important, just...
Oodleberries, Mr. Holm goes to pick them, but... Does Mr. Holm talk?
No.
So how did they say Mr. Holm said he left for berries and came back, they were gone? He must have wrote it.
Wrote it telepathically.
You need to write it down.
Maybe. Absolutely. They read his mind?
Mm. Okay.
Did it? Well, I guess we'll get there when we get there.
What's up?
I had a question about, did anybody, this is the first time I've noticed, but did anybody really believe that after they couldn't get a hold of the Enterprise for the first couple of hours, they didn't try some other Starfleet ship or installation? They really waited for 2 days before they contacted somebody to go looking for them?
That's a good question.
Or do an investigation?
Hmm.
Or did they have any ships of their own? Or did they actually just sit around for 2 days? Yeah, a very good point.
Just keep trying. They'll eventually answer.
Do you think they actually... Worf does mention, I think, as they come around out of the radiation or whatever's preventing them from getting in touch with a Beta Zed, Worf does mention, oh, we've got an incoming transmission. Do you think they're actually sitting on the phone, actually just waiting for it to be picked up? So like, ring, 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 ring. Or we're at hour 42. Ring, 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 ring.
Yeah, sounds like it.
How many times did they hang up and redial? Damn that Enterprise. Just keep calling. I mean, around the clock, did each ensign every 8 hours keep pressing the dispatch button?
Must have done. Mm. Okay, Lou, before you like rush off, because you are jumping very far ahead, there's something that I'm just going to take us back to, which is the... we had the discussion a little bit about Wesley and a lot of the praise that's put on him, but there's a really nice scene in engineering where Data and LaForge and Wesley are talking to each other about him leaving. And when they mention the fact that he might not come back, and then say, oh, don't worry, Picard will obviously ask for you back. Oh, but Picard might not be here. And it's not that critical. It's not really that important. But you see probably for the first time that it's Wesley kind of is placed in a world that is where he you know, his future may not be aligned to his current colleagues. And I think that up until then, you might have thought that, well, of course, Wesley's coming back because it's, you know, it's part of the story. And the character never really had any uncertainty that he was coming back. And I actually thought it was a very true and a very valid point that they just discussed there. And I quite like that piece of, you know, little character moment with Wesley. It doesn't need to go anywhere, but it's to me, it was a sign of Wesley kind of growing up and now realizing that what he has now is a little bit more special than, and is, and will potentially, you know, end at some point, and potentially soon.
So you think that made his decision to just skip the Bradbury and stay there a little easier? Because, I mean, needed to do was call it. He could have called the solution over while he was on the Bradbury warping away. But he wanted to be there on the bridge to deliver it in person.
No, I don't think it potentially played into his decision. But I just did think that, you know, there's a point where as everyone grows up, right, you realize that you're no longer going to be the center of attention. You're no longer invincible. And I just felt that this was a moment where Wesley kind of realized that actually he's not going to be here forever. And in particular, when they mentioned that, oh, Picard will want you back, perhaps Picard might not have the ship. And it's almost as if the penny drops for him. And I thought that was quite nice, especially as, you know, as this has been presented as someone effectively leaving home, going off to study at college, and you don't know where you're going to land in 4 or 5 or however many years' time.
Yeah.
No, I agree. That was a very nice scene. It was also very nice to see just a little bit of background for Geordi, have him talk about it, however briefly, his academy days, but to have Wesley realize that, oh, yeah, essentially I'm going off to college and things change. Not everything stays the same. Although he should kind of know that because of the fact that his mom went off to Starfleet Medical for a year, but anyway.
Hmm. Yeah, because he says, I just assumed I'd be coming right back here. Matter of fact, I'd probably doubt that he would ever get back to the Enterprise for a while. I'm sure there's a waiting list to the Enterprise, and the only reason he was there is because his mom was there.
Well, I mean, of course, that's why he was there originally, right? Mm-hmm. He came aboard with his mom. And I think that, yeah, I think it's just a bit of an awakening for him. And it's nice to have these interactions with Wesley. And actually, we had some... let me get this right. We had some last week as well in Sarek. And I like too much of the original, of the early seasons, are people putting praise on Wesley and Wesley being some type of, you know, super genius. And I think the more human you can make Wesley, the easier the character is to relate to. And actually, frankly, the more you accept when he does stuff and quote-unquote saves the day. Because he kind of saves the day in this episode, but it's nowhere near as jarring as when he saves the day in, like, The Naked Now or something like that. Mm. I was happy to accept him being the guy that made the connection. Because throughout the story that's being told in the B-plot, you get to know the character, you get to know his, you know, the uncertainties that he has, but also, you know, the future that he's looking forward to. And I just think that Wesley, written as today he's written, and as in this episode, is a very good character. Certainly if we remove the first couple of, you know, the first scene with him in. But Wesley, written as in the way that he was written in the first season, is a grating character. And I think that, you know, hopefully it's a sign that they're moving in the right direction.
Cool. Yep. Okay, so is there anything more we need from the middle part? Because I don't know what I've lost. I don't remember. I don't know why I try to go in order, but sometimes we bounce around. Okay. So we got the Oodle Berries. So they've been kidnapped, and now it's time to find the Creighton. Is that the name of it? The ship? in the vastness of space, but don't worry. They'll be able to do it. Because space is really tiny. Yes. But the solution was pretty cool. I mean, Riker sending the signal by the use of musical notes. Obviously, the Ferengi had no idea what it is. They just think it's distortion effect. And they locked onto it. Helm, warp 32. Oh, okay. Well, maybe not 32, but it was mighty fast.
Can I interject here for a second?
Please do.
One of the things that I do like about this episode is how they set up things in the first half of the episode that then come back later in the second half of the episode, and it's not an anvil type of, I'm going to set this up. The first thing, and the most obvious thing, is the rhythms, the Algolian, thank mm-hmm. you, rhythms that are being played in the background, which is what Riker uses to send the distress call and that Wesley picks up on. So that's the first thing. But the other thing is the fact that the scene I mentioned where Tog gave flowers to Loxanne and she just literally tosses them aside because they're dumb, which was funny in itself. But then when the Enterprise, after Beta Z for 2 days, has tried to get a hold of them, does their security investigation, that's how they know to even start listening to Ferengi ships, their whatever they're listening to, their output, whatever, you know, the warp
signature,
engine signatures, etc., because theoretically there's dozens of Ferengi ships within their sensor range, right? So they're trying to find something different, but the fact that they knew to even scan for the warp signatures of Ferengi ships was due to these flowers that Loxana tossed aside casually in disgust. So you had something set up at the beginning of the episode that pays off there. In addition, you see that with the chess game that Riker is playing with the Ferengi, that he beats him in 10 forward. And then that's how Riker tricks him into having him play him outside of the cell to be able to send the distress signal. And one of the other things I noticed is after the what I think is a particularly funny effort of Majel Barrett / Loxana Troi trying to make herself kiss Damon Tog, you know, with her pursed lips, and it cuts to commercial, comes back and she's being Loxana and just talking about all her past loves, and Damon Tog is basically shuts her down and says, oh no, I don't want to hear about all your past lovers, that's so boring, etc. Let's talk about something else. And that plays dividends at the end scene when Picard gets her back. So I like the way the episode was constructed, because what gets set up at the beginning pays off at the end.
Right. Love the end.
I have to say, let me, I'm going to echo everything you've just said, Sina, and I think it is all true, and it is a sign that this isn't just some random stuff that's happening. And there's clearly someone behind it trying to put these threads through. I think there's also one that let me just bring up another one that I think is interesting. And I'll also talk about one of the problems that I have, which is that we meet the Ferengi at the beginning, and you know, obviously one of them is infatuated with Loxana, but he manages to sell it that, you know, she's going to be useful because she's going to have powers that you could then use in your negotiations. And what you have two, you know, during the captive period, you have two parts, one where she's actually playing along and trying to effectively, you know, smooth talk the guy into escaping, which is playing into the infatuation side. But then after a while, you end up when you are, you know, you're no longer trusted, and then the scientist throws him into the mind reader chair thing. And that's really tied into the fact that, in addition to it being a daemon that's just after Laxala because she's, you know, lovely, there is this, also there's this worth to Laxala as a, like, as a mind reader. So if you didn't have that in play, then there's no reason why you go from Laxala on the bedside to Laxala on the, like, mind control or being risked in experiments. And I think that that kind of switch that they do wouldn't make sense at all unless it was, you know, forewarned at the beginning and, you know, allowed to develop in a you know, quote unquote natural way. Hmm. And now, having said that, I do have a problem that when they go from Laxana on the bedside to Laxana being thrown for scientific experiments, I think that that happens. I think that happens far, far, far too quickly. And I don't, you know, I know that the Ferengi aren't written as the most honorable the aliens in the world, but I think that he gives up this kind of jewel or this possession that he's been after very quickly as soon as the Neelix character comes in and says, "Hey, you nearly gave her your access code." Hmm. I think that's incompetence, and I'm gonna make sure that everyone hears about it. I think he's very quick to jettison the woman out into the into the scientific experiment lab chair.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you there, but I think it's because they had this backstory or B story with Wesley and you know, getting him into the ensign uniform, you know, that they didn't have time to develop the transition between the bedside Luoxana and the being experimented on Luoxana.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I'm going to come on to my one of the main issues I have with the episode now is that you've gone from the bedside lover into I'm going to be experimented on. And then Riker kind of breaks in and he does this kind of rescue scene. And I think that this part of the episode is the weakest, or at least it cannot be viewed in any way seriously, because kind of Riker breaks in with a gun and says, "Hey, you know, that's it. You know, we're taking over." And almost like 5 or 6 seconds later, he ends up being captured by the guy that's walking behind him, like about 4 or 5 steps.
Yeah, I saw that.
And and then they rip Laxana out of this mind control experiment thing that's going on that reminds me about, you know, Dagger of the Mind, that leads people into a catatonic state that they're going to be in for weeks. And Laxana sits up from what you might describe as being abused and tortured and goes, "So, Daemon, let's negotiate about how we should get out of this. I think you should, you know, I'll stay around and you should let these two go back to the Enterprise and everything will be hunky-dory." And I didn't see any damage or any... I found that there was a very bad transition from bedside to torturing Laxana to her being willing to pay back by the bedside. And that was a little bit... It wasn't well enough played. And I couldn't help but think that, you know, the one scene of this episode that everyone knows is the Picard scene at the end. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't help but think that they had that scene, and they thought, actually, this is how you end it. You have to end it by Picard threatening to destroy the Ferengi vessel in a jealous rage, and you almost had that as a fixed point. And I felt that they also wanted to get her. Try to seduce the Ferengi, and they also probably wanted her to be experimented on by the second Ferengi, but I just didn't think they had the confidence to thread it all together well enough. And I don't know, I just did anyone else feel that the roller coaster there for Laxana was a little bit odd?
I didn't think that it was odd in that sense, but I do. I also noticed, well, for somebody who was in pain and Deanna was reacting because of their telepathic bond, she sure didn't seem like she had any effects. She, you know, not even getting up and, "Oh, whoa, I'm dizzy. You know, you've been messing with my mind," or anything. And again, I think that's just a function of everything that they were trying to say in this episode you have the Troy story, Troy slash Riker story, and then you have the Wesley story. And I'm not saying that they were crammed together. I think they flowed fairly well. But yes, the transition from bedside Loxana to lab rat Loxana back to I'm going to work with you bedside Loxana definitely was too quick.
Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons why I mentioned at the beginning that does Riker need to be here, I almost feel like that part of the episode could have been a lot more emotional had it just been the two Troys, and you could have made it a much more deeper and much more darker, I suppose, drama. And I know that at the same time you do have this final scene coming, right, which is a great final scene that I'm convinced they had that first and they needed to get there rather than felt that it naturally followed on. I don't know how they could have done this better, but I just feel that there's something not quite transitioning right. And I suppose that's probably the best as I can put it.
But I think it's forgiven because of the scene that comes with Picard later. Nobody remembers, if you talk to fans about Menage a Troy, nobody remembers the fact that she was about to almost get lobotomized by the scientific or by the science officer or whatever, the doctor, the Ferengi doctor. What they remember is the beginning with Loxana and the ceremony and the reception. And of course, then Picard's quote unquote jealous rage, I'm going to destroy your ship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think because there is that rush to, and you know what, you think it's the end of the episode and it's not really the end of the episode. The end of the episode is Wesley getting his field commission.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. But you think it's the end of the episode because that's what you remember, and there's a rush to get to that. And I hadn't thought about it this way, but I do think you're right, that they had this set point, that they had this wonderful actor, Patrick Stewart, who can show his chops both as a lovesick captain willing to destroy for his love and, because he's jealous. And they had to just rush to get there.
And this kind of, this kind of uncomfortable position very often comes up in these Loxana episodes. I mean, they often try to make Picard feel really uncomfortable, and they put him in positions that he wouldn't necessarily want to be in. And I think that I agree that this is foreshadowed at the halfway through the episode with them talking about, her previous lovers. But you almost could have had this, whenever Loxana would have got herself into a pickle and being abducted by, race A or B or C or D, this kind of ending is a great thing to put at the end of any of those episodes, in a way. Now, that obviously, I understand that there's certainly foreshadowing in here that makes it work really, really well. But I felt that this is such a great scene to end with, and it to a certain extent, I think it slightly overshadows, or it would have overshadowed any darker story that I was suggesting that they would have wanted to put on, because it certainly wouldn't have flown in better if they'd gone in that direction.
Right, and I think that was my point earlier, in that because they made this to be a comedic episode, that you couldn't have the more serious, darker issues of just having Loxana and Deanna deal with this situation / tragedy together.
At which point you then might think, well, why have the why have the bit with the science officer or the doctor that tries to take Roxanne out? Does that detour need to be there? And I'm not necessarily convinced it does. I'm not necessarily convinced that Riker needs to be the guy giving them away their position. They could just have stumbled across a Ferengi ship without having to hear the bleep, bleep, bleep in the warp engine. Although I suppose that does connect into Wesley. I don't have any better ideas. I sometimes feel that this episode is slightly less than the sum of its parts.
Okay.
Now, Lou, The only way you can get me back is over Damon Targ's dead body. Great, isn't it?
My love is a fever, longing still for that which longer nurseth to disease. So I thought, you know, maybe we could talk about this a little bit. What does he mean by this, by the whole thing? My love is a fever, longing still for that which longer nurseth the disease. Is Luoxana the disease, or was she the cure for the disease? Because obviously, longing still for that which no longer nurseth the disease. So he's longing still for her, even though she's not there no more.
I suppose so. I am not an expert on love poetry.
Me either.
Maybe Cena is.
Oh, she has to be.
Nope. Why? Just because I'm a girl?
You telling me guys haven't quoted you love poetry all your life?
I am telling you guys have not quoted me love poetry all my life.
I know how you feel. No guys have quoted me love poetry either. In faith, I do not love thee with mine eyes, for they in thee a thousand Odyssey. Wow. What's he trying to say there? With his eyes, because they in thee a thousand error see? It's almost like, no offense, it's almost like she's trying to say, that's his way of calling her an ugly bitch. But I don't think so. Because...
No, he's just saying that he's willing to look past whatever superficial, you know, less than perfect state anyone is in, and to see through to the natural beauty, you know, or the inner beauty of the person.
Because I happen to think...
That's all is being said.
I happen to think Luoxana's pretty sexy, actually. Maybe.
But why did you say maybe at the end of that?
I don't know. There are times that Majel Barrett was pretty damn attractive in Star Trek. And I think she seemed to get better looking as she got older. I'm not sure about Nurse Chapel as much as I am Luoxana. Does that make sense?
It could be how she dresses. I don't know.
It's possible. It's possible.
Well, I mean, I think it is to an extent, right?
Yeah.
So Luoxana is like over the top and flamboyant and sometimes falling out of her dress.
Uh-huh.
And Nurse Chapel is very, you know, straight-laced, has a certain longing for logical men.
Yeah.
I don't know if you consider yourself a logical man, Lou, but you know, I can. There's clearly an overtly sociable, you know, character being portrayed here with Luoxana.
Right.
I'm very open,
and I'm not too logical. But 'tis my heart that loves what they despise. So his eyes despise her, who, in spite of you, are pleased to dote. Again, the view's not very good, it seems. Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Now that I don't know. Thou art more lovely and more temperate. And then... because, obviously, Luoxana and Tog talk over him. So I'm not exactly sure what he's saying at that point. No, actually, I am sure. I found it. Let me not to the marriage of true minds admit impediments. Love is not love, which alters when it alteration finds or bends with the remover to remove. I didn't get any of that. But boy, I tell you, Picard sure is a romantic, isn't he? With that some of that Shakespeare.
I'm surprised he's single. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he hasn't met the right musician. When I have plucked the rose, I cannot get of it vital growth again. Its needs must wither. But the best part is when he said 9, 8. I mean, I love this part here. You know, its needs must wither. 9, 8.
It's great, isn't it?
Yes. 'Tis better to have lost Love and lost and then never to have loved at all. 7, 6. It's almost as good as goodbye, Geordi. I will miss you at weapons orientation seminars or whatever. He's good at weapons. He can make us strong. They say a lot by saying very little.
Although I have to say, I mean, it's still very much, you know, all of this is played for comedy, of course. Yeah. It's all very much over the top.
Yeah.
I mean, had you not had the Ferengi, I think I mentioned a bit earlier that does this need to be set at the Ferengi? It kind of does, because they're the ones that are stupid enough to swallow it. And, you know, at the beginning, when Troy is trying to get Picard to, you know, behave in a certain way and to, like, you know, win Laxana back, it's very clear that, you know, they're having a chat about this and they're staging this. So really, only a species as stupid as the Ferengi would put up with it. But I think that, you know, everyone loves a stupid Ferengi.
Oh yeah. Yes. You wonder, in a war between Ferenginar and the Pakleds, how much fun could that possibly be? That would absolutely be a riot. Wouldn't it? I think that'd be one of the funniest things to see, is a war between the Ferengi and the Pakled.
Everybody would just be on the sidelines eating popcorn.
Yes, absolutely. They think we're stupid. We are smart. You're not smart. You don't get profit. Okay, so anyway, like you say, let's go back to acting ensign Wesley Crusher. He's no longer an acting ensign. How can Picard do that? Can he start anybody off as, say, a lieutenant if he wanted to? With no academy training?
I mean, go ahead, Sina.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think this is just part of the, again, showing that Wesley is pretty exceptional.
Yeah.
Because he's already doing the job of an ensign without academy training.
Mm-hmm. Well, he already knows more than just about any academy graduate.
Right.
So, but I did like, you know, I do like, as much as I'm not crazy about Wesley Crusher, and I will say I love Will Wheaton, but I do like the ready room scene. You know, is there a problem, Captain? Well, I'm just thinking I'm saying goodbye to you, but you said I couldn't go. I like that part. You know, yeah, the Academy must make you wait, which I think is crap too. What do you mean the Academy must make him wait? Why not just warp 9.2 to wherever he was going to go to get him in his oral exam? But it's a different story, because if he did that, he doesn't stay on the ship. But
because then he wouldn't be a field commission ensign on the ship.
Right. You know, and he wouldn't be instrumental in Best of Both Worlds, which obviously nobody knew about at the time. But I do like the promotion ceremony. And then he comes walking out, and you see him from toe to head with the good looking in the red suit. I will say that too. Gets out of the rainbow uniform. Now he gets out of that dull gray uniform.
Right, like James mentioned, pajamas.
Yes. Well, they all wear pajamas, but. Oh, I mean, in this season, do they zip up in the back, or are they two pieces?
They're two pieces.
That's right, because then you don't
get. For the senior crew, at least.
Yes, you don't get the Picard tug if they were one piece pajamas. Yes, and the no-name crew still wear their skirts, dresses.
Well, no, but they wear the older uniforms, or at least many of them do. I don't think, for example, Barclay didn't. Barclay had a proper one, but that's because he was a speaking role, I suppose, that week.
Mm-hmm. And boy, was he a speaking role. Okay, so out of the silly suit, into the suit could possibly get him killed. That's one flaw about TNG. There's just not enough red shirt deaths.
Really?
That might be true. That might be.
Yeah, no, there's not a lot of deaths. Not like Enterprise or Deep Space Nine, where you see bodies flying out of ship parts. I mean, or even in 2009, you see the poor lady was walking along minding her own business. All of a sudden, she got blown out into space and dung! Hit some part of the ship. Oh, God, that had to hurt. Okay, anything else, guys?
I'm glad to defer anything else to Cena, because I think I'm done.
Yes. I have one more. Just a couple things.
Go ahead.
Maybe I'll see. One of them goes back to the beginning where, after the credits, Deanna and Worf are walking along in the hallway, and Worf has one of his three lines in this episode, but he was admiring the way that Loxana handled the situation skillfully.
Yes.
Admirable woman. They give Worf the best lines. They really do.
Yes. An admirable woman. Yeah, I think he might have been in love or something. And then we get
that ends after cost of living, trust me.
And then after that we get the come in little one.
Right. But that's just kind of I love these scenes that the writers end up putting in TNG where they're walking in the corridors and just kind of slice of life. That gets some of the best throwaway moments that generally don't have anything to do with the plot, but have something to do with life on the ship or something about the characters that you find out. They're usually pretty good.
All right. What else you got?
Just a couple of other things, you know, of Picard wanting to avoid Loxana in the reception. Yes, when he avoids her, it's because he wants to show the new door mechanisms
I had that at the beginning as well, but Lou, you ripped us through this episode so quick. Sorry. That I didn't feel that was appropriate to go back.
You want
to
re-record it?
That you have, and the thing that you have as well is that you have this expression on Alexander's face, which is like a, oh dear, you know, they're going off to look at the elevator, the turbo lift fixings. And you can tell that it's clear a nonsense excuse to get out of there. And she seems to accept it for some reason. And I don't quite know why, but it always tickles me the way that, you know, I read it as both Picard and the other guy that is with Data, they know it's complete BS that they're selling her. And I think she knows that it's BS as well, but she kind of accepts it as a, you know, okay, I know that I'm not going to be able to, you know, leave with you at the moment or use you as my human shield with this oncoming Ferengi.
Or, like Picard says, you know, for a telepath, your mother's telepathic skills leave a lot to be desired. Maybe she's just not as good at it as, because she should have detected he's full of crap instantly. Yes, no.
And then, yeah, she should have. But again, maybe she was just, you know, she just had a kind of a fight with her daughter and then had to deal with this little toad of a Ferengi. Maybe she just wasn't up to snuff then.
Okay.
And then my last thing was, of course, telling, was it Data or Wesley? I can't remember, to go to Warp 9 to get Loxana back to Beta Z after he gets her back.
Right. Yes. Mr. Crusher, set a course for Beta Z. Warp 9.
Exactly. Underneath his breath.
Yes. Warp 9.
I didn't catch that this time.
Really?
I must have missed that.
Yeah, that is funny. I like that part.
Or at least I was distracted. But yeah, it's in complete keeping with the character, right?
Right. I mean, are there no speed limits in space?
Not when you're heading back to Beta Z.
There aren't enough space cops to pull everybody over, I guess. I don't know. Okay. Well then, Is it time for our final thoughts and ratings?
Roll on, yeah.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, I don't have anything else.
Okay. It's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being Ben the best.
I love that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Because everything in Ben is for Ben is a 5. Captain Proton. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm gonna start this one because I think we should start on the low note before we get to the high note. End the show on the high note if possible. This is this is somewhere between a 2 and a 3. I sometimes find some stories so boring that I find myself, and I think I know why we missed a lot of spots. Because I think I know so much about this episode that I write ahead, and then when I am watching that particular part, I think, well, I've already got this covered, and I just flip through the, I hit the right button, and it just fast forwards, and that's probably why I'm missing some things. Because I have nowhere in my notes about Luoxana and Daemon Tog in bed. I had actually forgotten, and while we were talking, I remembered that part where Deanna reacted, and so I made sure I had a spot to put that in. So I'm sorry. When I find a thing boring, the ADD in me kicks in, and I just kind of start to lose consciousness. I don't know. I do like the ending parts. Pretty much the last few minutes were just gold. My love is a fever. And I think Love is a Fever is probably why it's not getting any worse rating. This is probably one of the worst Ferengi episodes. And there's other stinkers we've went through in season 1, season 2. It's in no way a magnificent Ferengi, which is not one of the stinkers. So when we get to lower pylon 2, I cannot wait to do the magnificent Ferengi. I love that one. It's just the comedic value is great. Let's see here. Deanna, she looked kind of hot in her purple outfit, even if the purple outfit was kind of ugly. But she really, the way they dressed Deanna Troi up, she can be stunning. And she looked a lot of goddess of empathy view when they were on the planet. So she's very beautiful. Luoxana, she kind of gets cliche-ish at a time. The way she does certain things. Picard. Oh, Captain Picard, you should not think such nasty things. But I like Luoxana. And even in this episode, she is pretty awesome. It's just the episode I have a problem with. So I do look forward to episodes like Half a Life. Or just about any other Luoxana, especially there's an episode with her, with Luoxana and Alexander, not too long after Gene Roddenberry died, and when she talks about, I'm alone, Alex. And in that moment, I guarantee you, you know, knowing what we know about her, about Majel Barrett's real life, I can't wait till we get to those episodes, because that's when I think she's absolutely the best. But let's get past this one. I'm actually going to go increase and give it a 2.5. I was thinking about a 2, but some of the things, the promotion scene is touching. The end of Shakespeare is funny. So in the end, it goes up a little more for me. So I'm going 2.5. And I hope there ain't too many people yelling at their computer or their radio right now. So, Doc, since she's going to be probably on a higher note, let's end it on a higher note, and let's do you next.
Okay, sure. I think I've been all over the place in this episode, to be honest with you. I don't think I've been consistent. I don't think I've been coherent. And I think I've just been, you know, almost randomly putting stuff out. So let me try to summarize a little better than maybe I've kind of performed throughout this show. I think that something I stumbled across, I do think that this episode is slight, you know, it is not as good as the sum of its parts for whatever reason. I do find the bit as you transition out of one of the story threads they have on the Ferengi ship into the more threat that they have, and whilst keeping a lighter tone, and I do think it's clunky in how that happens. But Bettina is right when she mentions that the episode is very well. Well, first of all, it's very well written. There's a lot of stuff that is foreshadowed that goes through. It's not just a single thing that that is focused upon and then it gets referenced back. There's a lot of stuff that is thread through this episode. A lot of it makes sense. I enjoyed watching this quite a lot. I felt that there were some missed opportunities. I still, for the life of me, I'm convinced I hate Riker. And maybe that was one of the main reasons why I'm trying to get Riker out of the main storyline here. But I like the Ferengi interaction. I like Roxana Troi. I think Troi, Deanna Troi is perfectly good in this episode. The last scene with Picard is great. I liked the character development of Wesley. And, other than the first scene when everyone's going around and giving a pat on the back, I think Wesley is well written for. And it's something that I've mentioned before. I think that I hate Wesley when people are written to react to Wesley badly. And by badly, I mean usually gushing.
Mm.
I really don't quite know where to come down on this. I don't think it's not a two-star episode at all. I think this has a lot of features that could have made it a great standout episode had certain things been tweaked. But, I'm certainly no one to ask about how you would have done that, because I don't know. I think it's not hitting the heights of, the top of season 3, but I did enjoy it. I think that there were missed opportunities, but it's my mind is coming in between a 3 and a 4. I don't do half points. It's a low 4 in my mind. So does that make me crazy?
I'm sorry, did you say a 4?
I think that's rather incredible.
Okay. Nothing wrong with it.
Why, are you coming in like a 3.1?
No, I was thinking 3.5, quite frankly, because I really enjoy this episode. Do I think it's as funny as some other episodes could tend to be? No. But there's a lot of stuff that I like about this episode, and I think I mentioned a lot of it as we were talking about the episode, the sight humor, the good lines, Loxana being Loxana and then turning serious when she needed to be serious. But if you're going to give it a 4, I can't give it less than you. Because you didn't like some aspects, James, more than I did, if that makes any sense. In other words, you found more fault with the episode than I did.
I have a crazy scoring system as well, though, right?
Well, I was debating between 3.5 and 4, so I can give it a 4. That's not an issue. It just has a lot of things that I like. And one thing I didn't mention, but if you're a regular listener of 10 Forward, you know that I am a particular fan of the Deanna and Will relationship. And so this is, just kind of the cherry on top of the ice cream, because they kind of tease you with it and they show them kissing, and that's nice. I like that. So there's a lot to like about the episode. I'm not blind to the flaws, like I pointed out, that 2-day thing. And one other thing is definitely 80s makeup for the ladies. It was just very, very garish for the reception and for when Deanna goes into Loxana's rooms afterwards, after the reception. I kept looking at them and I kept getting distracted by their eyeshadow and the hair, and it was just very jarring for me. But that's just probably a girl thing. Hmm. I bet you y'all didn't even notice the makeup, did you?
No.
Crickets.
I didn't notice people wearing makeup, and then my wife seems to think I'm crazy. Most men don't notice makeup.
Right. So anyway,
and then when you ask a woman, they go, "Of course they do. Of course they do." Of course. But we don't notice.
Anyway, so that was kind of jarring for me, but I really enjoy this episode, which is why I asked to be on this particular show.
Okay. I know there was a lot of color in their wardrobe, but... Okay. Okay, so you said, I'm sorry, 3.5. I better write that down. Or
well, I was vacillating between 3.5 and 4, but I cannot go lower than James, so 4.
4 it is. Okay then, Cena, when are we going to have you back?
I was just taking a look at your schedule, and I will let you know. Wow, it's almost full.
Yeah, we're quick.
Feel free to kick some other people off. Especially people that have more than one appearance a season.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure the head of the network would like me to kick him off. Sorry, Mark.
He won't know. He doesn't listen to this show.
Maybe I'll kick off Kieran McDuff. Haha, I'm joking.
Oh my goodness.
I'll take a look and see exactly what's available and let you know.
See, it's a good thing he was on last week's show for Sarek because he'll never know you said that.
Never.
Right. I don't remember what we said about Sarek. Do you or James at all?
I have very bad memory.
Yes, it's terrible. Do you get it, Cena?
I get it.
Got it. Good.
Okay. We need to let Cena go. So.
Oh, yeah. Okay, Cena, thank you for coming on.
And no, thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
We'll see you soon.
Next time on Star Trek The Next Generation, a life-saving mission uncovers a mysterious humanoid.
Who are you? What are you?
He is one of four escaped prisoners.
Is he the helpless victim of an evil plot?
I cannot control what is happening to me.
Or a fugitive who could destroy the crew.
They don't know how dangerous you are.
Find out on Star Trek, The Next Generation.
So everyone, why don't you join us again one more time if I didn't piss you off by giving it a 2.5. Join us again next week as we review episode 25 for season 3, and that is Transfigurations. I'm having a hard time remembering that. But that's with Mark Stamper.
John Doe.
Huh?
It's John Doe.
John Doe, yes. Beverly Falls for John Doe. And then after that, guys, that's when we're going to have the best of both worlds hit us. Like a ton of bricks.
Never heard of it.
It's two worlds, and you get the best of both of them.
Wasn't that like a Miley Cyrus song?
I have no idea. I don't know.
Hannah Montana, probably more correct to say.
Yeah, right. And by the time you guys hear this episode, I will be worth over $700 million. I don't know how many...
That doesn't get you out of the last four seasons, though.
Right. Oh, so I still got to... I can't hire somebody to do it? Because right now, as we record this... The Powerball in here in the States is worth over $700 million. So, get your lottery tickets. Oh, no, forget it. No, I've already won it. I'm sure I'm going to win it. I know I'm going to. Cena, have you gotten your lottery tickets?
No, I actually haven't yet.
Oh, well, run to Casey's. I'm getting me a Casey's pizza tonight, and I probably will get about 5 or 10 of them. What the hell? $700 million.
Tickets.
I'll just get one pizza. But I'm going to have to get some lottery tickets. 700. I don't know. What do you think? How many pounds that is?
Around 500.
That's all? 500 million pound?
Yeah.
I'll send it.
It's around 1.5 or so.
Really? Okay.
$1.5 to the pound.
I'll tell you what, James. If I win the $700 million lottery, I will send you £1 million. How's that?
I appreciate that.
Good. It'd be for Cassiopeia. 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 Cena, good night.
Good night.
And goodbye, everyone.
Okay, good night.
Cassiopeia.